Deep in the rainforests of Central America are the ruins of a lost civilization that have a warning for humanity. Time is running out.
It's us again. It's episode 48.
Yeah, this is a good one today. I love this subject.
This is a very good subject. This was your idea, actually.
That's right. We're going to talk about the Mesoamericans, the myths about the Maya.
The Maya.
Yeah.
Yes, not Mayan. That's only referring to the language.
Yeah.
You can say it when you're referring to the language, but they're not the Mayans. They're the Maya.
Yeah, I grew up in South America, in Brazil, you know, as a teenager. So I love the Mesoamerican stuff.
Well, I always loved their iconography. It just seems, it's so unique. I mean, the Egyptian, I always love Egyptian stuff. Egyptian stuff is really cool, but it's, you know, the Mesoamerican stuff is like so creepy.
And when I was
like,
there,
all the skulls and all the intricate stonework.
When I was there, it was in the 80s, so it was kind of like a cross between, for me, and from my point of view, it was like a cross between Indiana Jones and Duran Duran. Kind of happening at the same time. You know what I mean? I always liked that stuff.
That's so funny, because that sounds like a lot like my 80s, Indiana Jones and Duran Duran. Two of my favorite things. The 80s, which, you know what I'm saying. Okay, so before we get to talking about the Maya, we're talking about myths about the Maya, and we're talking about facts about the Maya, and misconceptions about the Maya also.
Actually, truth is strange. Stranger than fiction when it comes to the Maya.
But yeah, pretty much, I guess. Yeah.
And, the Aztecs were a Maya breakaway. We'll get to it.
So before that, we're going to do a couple of shout outs like we usually do. First thing we're going to talk about is Project Entertainment Network, as usual.
Always giving them
On which our audio podcast is hosted. They're rad dudes. Also, this upcoming weekend, which is July 21st through 23rd, is the Scares That Care Charity Weekend in Williamsburg, Virginia. And several of the podcasters from Project Entertainment Network, including the head of the network, Armand Rosamilia, who is also a horror writer, will be there. So if you want to go there and raise some money for a good cause and stuff like that, you can, if you're in the Virginia area, you can do that. And speaking of being in the area and meeting people, as usual, we're going to mention Spooky Empire, which is coming up at the end of October. It's the weekend before Halloween, the 27th through the 29th, I believe. Mm-hmm. And it's here in Orlando, Florida. It is a very large horror convention, and it's always a lot of fun. And both Tom and I will be there live, in person.
That's right.
You know,
if you're in town, come see us.
Yes. So we will be there signing books, being on panels, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. So if you're in the area the weekend before Halloween, then come and see us and say hello.
Mm-hmm.
Also want to give a shout out to Where Did the Road Go? Part 2 of my interview about my book, The Unseen Hand, is up now. I don't think part 3 is up yet. Not of this recording, anyway. But part 2 is up. And also, there are some extra bits of me talking about The Unseen Hand, about a couple of poltergeist cases that are on their Patreon page that is for patrons only. So if you want to go to their Patreon page, which is patreon.com/SorayaAzcath, I'll put a link in the description.
Yeah.
If you want to go give them a couple of dollars for their podcast, I really like Where Did the Road Go? It's a really good podcast.
Soraya's got a really good show. If you like our show, you'd like his too.
Yeah. It's similar kinds of paranormal type topics, weird type stuff.
Right.
So it's a really good show. And also, again, The Unseen Hand, if you haven't purchased a copy yet, then go ahead and do that.
Sales strong on that one.
They are very, very good. People seem to like the audiobook, which is nice. People must love my voice. Which I don't know why, whatever. Right. It sounds really weird to me, especially lately because I have some kind of weird ear thing going on and everybody talks. That sounds like they're talking through a pillow. It really sucks. So I sound very weird to myself right now.
Oh, tell me about the Patreon.
Oh, okay. Also, speaking of Patreon, we are actually getting to the point where we will be starting a Patreon soon.
Yeah, actually, the show went on much longer than I thought it was going to go.
Yeah.
But, you know, but
we're coming up to almost a year, right?
Right. But I estimate that we probably have about 2,000 regular listeners if you put the podcast and the YouTube together. So, you know, hey, may as well start a Patreon. If they like the show and they want it to continue coming, we can make the show a priority.
Yeah.
Because we really didn't intend to make this, I guess, a regular show. It just kind of happened.
It just kind of happened organically. And honestly, between doing this weekly show and doing our new channel, 13 O'Clock in Minutes, doing the videos for that, This actually takes up quite a bit of time.
Yeah, it's slowly becoming a full-time job.
It really is or at least a large part-time job. But because of between all the research and doing all the graphics and doing the recording and sound engineering and whatnot, and especially now that we've started the In Minutes one, and I actually did put a 10th video up. Right. The other day, if any of y'all saw it.
I was just thinking, I said, you know, even if just some of the people decided to throw us a couple bucks a month, you know, we could assure quality and consistency.
Yeah, it would really help. Because, I mean, even though these take a long time to do, but I wanted them to be as good as we could make them.
Right.
And, I mean, if we had Patreons, we could get like a better microphone because this one's all right, but it's not fantastic. Right. We could get better equipment.
Invest
more time in it. We could make more merchandise, stuff like that. Because I actually have other, I'm a writer too, and I also do freelance graphic design. That's actually a large portion of my, so, you know, I have to take time out of
kind of kill some of the graphic designs and focus more on this, and it would work out
probably. Yeah, that would probably be good. Yeah. So, I mean, it'll probably be a couple weeks before we make like the big announcement. I was thinking maybe we would do like the big rollout, like maybe on episode 50,
okay,
which is a couple weeks from now. Maybe that'll be our big special 50th episode thing we're going to do.
we need to cut a pitch video.
Yeah. I also want to give a plug to my blog, Goddess of Hellfire. A couple of you suggested, it's like, oh, why didn't you put a link to it in the description? And I was like, oh yeah, duh, I should have done that. So I'll do it from now on. But if you're into horror movies, there's a lot of horror movies, horror books, kind of reviews. I post on there. I've been doing it for several years, but I've just now recently started putting newer reviews up there. So if you're interested in horror, please go read that. Some of them are funny.
Oh, 13 O'Clock in Minutes, the new channel. It's called 13 O'Clock in Minutes. I think it probably only has about 15.
There's 10 videos up there now.
You put like
trying to make one a week. I can't always guarantee that because they take a long time to do, but I do have 10 up there, and I have so far been able to do one a week.
But everybody should go over there and subscribe to that channel also. That'll move it up in the algorithms, and we'll start getting more hits.
We also had a suggestion that I should narrate them, and I don't know. Maybe I could narrate some of them. It takes longer.
I can understand how somebody would want to sit back and kind of just hypnotically listen to it. The thing is that the narration might get in the way.
Maybe I could do some of them narrated. I don't know. Like I said, they kind of take a long time. Let's get to talk about the Maya. But before we do that, if you are interested in like Maya mythology or Maya apocalypse type stuff, there was a horror anthology that came out, I believe, back in 2010. And it was called 2012 AD. It was from Severed Press. And I had a short story in there called The Five Hills of Ikenzijo. And it's a really good anthology. I have a copy and I've read all the other stories in there. They're really rad. So if you are interested in Maya fiction, Maya-based fiction or Maya mythology-based fiction, you might want to pick that up. It's a really entertaining book, I think. And I have a short story in there. So, you know, you can read some of my fiction if you haven't done that. Mm-hmm. All right. So speaking of Maya apocalypse, let's start talking about the Mayan 2012 apocalypse.
Yeah, I remember when people would talk about that.
Yeah, like, did people actually think the world was going to end in 2012? I don't know.
Well, I think people
hoped.
Hoped it was going to end in 2012. whenever there's some kind of an apocalyptic thing going on, there's always, I always detect this element of people hoping that the apocalypse would happen.
They're like, yeah, I don't have to pay my mortgage next month. Just, you know, awesome. Yeah. Don't hope the world's not going to end, you guys. Don't worry about it. But
it'll end.
Well, but not anytime soon. None of us are going to be here to worry about it, so don't worry.
Right.
About. But you know, as many of you may know, the world did not end in 2012. We're not speaking to you from the afterlife or anything like that. But the perception that the world was going to end because the Mayans said so was because of a misunderstanding of their long count calendar. Yeah. Specifically, they have several calendars, but it was specifically their long count calendar.
Yeah, and if you see graphics on how the calendar works, it's quite cool. It's a bunch of concentric wheels that turn.
Yeah, it's three interlocking circles.
Yeah, and glyphs show up to represent certain... you're making like a code for the exact name of a day.
Right.
That way, each day in the long count has its own name.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, the one circle is actually just for ceremonial and like religious dates. Right. And then one of them is like a 260 day. I think it's like a 13 months or something like that. And then the other one is the long count. Now, ironically, they call the long count the Mayan calendar, but they didn't actually not invent it.
No, it's older.
It's much older. They're just one of the cultures that used this particular calendar configuration. The thing is, the long count calendar started according to the Gregorian calendar, August 11th, 3114 BC. So that was when the world began, according to the Maya.
Yeah.
Now, because the calendar appeared to quote-unquote end on the winter solstice, 2012, people thought that the actual world was going
to
end.
It had to do with the changing of the baktun, I think is what they call it, which was the actual whole calendar now resets.
It's resetting.
Because it's
it
run
goes
out.
Back it to zero, zero,
goes
zero,
back
zero,
to zero. That's all it meant.
Which, I can see how people would have that interpretation, because some of the glyphs from the time do show, like, various gods turning up at the turning of the resetting of the baktun or whatever. So you can see how maybe this would be perceived as a sort of, like, apocalyptic event, you know, much like Armageddon, you know, in the Christian tradition or whatever.
Well, I think the Maya probably wouldn't have considered it to be the end anyway. They just would have now called it Tu Baktun.
Yeah, it's just the rollover.
The second, just the rollover.
And honestly, I think in Guatemala, in some archaeological sites in Guatemala, they did find evidence that the Maya believed that the calendar would continue after that point. So they didn't think the world was going to end necessarily. It was just some kind of like resetting.
One of the weird things that modern Westerners don't really realize about the Maya, and this probably goes back to Olmec and Toltec even before them, they seem to have basically worshipped time itself to a certain extent. Not only was a bunch of gods, but time itself was something to be venerated, which is kind of a weird concept.
And you can kind of see this thread kind of running through a lot of the ancient peoples, because so much of their life was revolved around astronomy and revolved around the changing of the seasons and the fertility of the fields and things like that. You can see how much importance was placed on those type of things.
Right.
I mean, it seems weird to us now, but it wasn't at all weird to them.
They had to know when the seasons would change.
Yeah, they had to know all those things exactly. Their lives depended on it.
When to plant.
Right.
When to reap your crops and all that. And when things went down bad, things stopped working correctly, they always interpreted it as the gods being angry and they had to compensate. Because they would deplete the soil around their cities.
Yeah.
And they're like, why isn't it growing? You know, why isn't it growing? We did something wrong. They start sacrificing people.
Like I said, you can't really blame them for thinking that. But anyway, so what people, like, I specifically remember 2012, and no, since the Maya didn't really say what was going to happen specifically, all of these kind of crazy things, usually concerned around astronomical things, kind of turned up about what was going to happen on December 21st, 2012. There was shit like, oh, there was that was like peak solar activity, which happens every 11 years, and it's not really that big. It disrupts electromagnetic fields a little bit, but even the one that happened in 2012 was kind of minor, so no biggie. Some people predicted that the magnetic poles of the Earth would flip-flop in one day.
Right.
Which, the magnetic pole, and if you didn't know, it does.
It does.
But it's gradual. It's so gradual that there's no disruption in the fossil record. I think the last time it happened was like 780,000 years ago or something like that. So it does happen, just not like immediately. And it doesn't really have an effect on life on the planet. There was also a thing where like a black hole would come and swallow the Earth. One of my favorite ones was that Planet X, Nibiru. Also known as Nibiru, was going to smack into the Earth.
Yeah.
Which, one, that planet's not there. NASA would have seen it long ago. They said, look, if it was going to hit the Earth in December 2012, we would have seen it. They said it would have been as bright as Mars in April of that year.
Right.
Like, coming at you, if it was coming at you with that.
Well, you know, these kind of legends and these kind of tales, you know, they're not about logic. It's about feeling and imagination.
Yeah, that's true.
And people kind of hoping that there's a planet coming.
This
people
is so,
like mystery, you know.
I guess, but that's
there
like,
are mysteries, but there's enough mysteries. You don't have to make more.
Yeah, see, that's the way I always thought of it. Like, I am super skeptical of pretty much everything, you know.
Yeah.
But it's like, I love mysteries as much as the next person, but I don't like to invent mystery where there isn't one.
Right.
And if there's not a mystery, I want to know that it's not a mystery.
Right.
I want to know what's really going on behind that.
But needless to say, that Mayan calendar 2012 stuff didn't happen because we're still here.
Yeah, obviously. Right. They also said there was going to be a planetary alignment.
Right.
And NASA was like, yeah, big whoop, there's planetary alignments all the time. There was one in 2000. There was one in 1982. And it's like, and
it doesn't do anything.
Nothing happened. So, you know, chill. Okay, so aside from all the kind of apocalyptic stuff about the Mayans, which obviously didn't happen, there are also a lot of stuff about, all the ancient alien type of stuff, Atlantis, that they didn't really build the pyramids, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Like, which you kind of get about all ancient cultures, really.
Yeah.
Which to me always
kind of insulting.
Yeah, it always seemed like super racist, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm always thinking, oh, those poor ancient people were too dumb to figure out how to build pyramids.
Yeah.
So like, so, oh, they must have obviously had extraterrestrial help.
Right.
Because they could.
It's ridiculous.
Look, ancient people were no dumber than people today. Right. For real. And you have to think, it's not like the ancient Egyptians or the ancient Mesoamericans were sitting around going, boy, I sure wish somebody would invent the wheel or would invent a backhoe or something like that.
Yeah.
They just worked with what they had, just like everyone else does.
Right. And a lot of the motivations to build these things were exactly the same motivations you'd have today to build a skyscraper.
Right.
It really, really it revolved around money and power. Even like the Great Pyramids of Giza. It was about money and power, even though it was cloaked in religion. That was built by a construction company.
Yeah.
You know, we know that those were built by construction companies. All the little blocks are encoded with numbers to tell you what teams built it and who moved it. So there's a lot of money involved in building that thing. Even though the Egyptians didn't have money, they traded. It was kind of like a barter system. But it was about money and power.
And like I said, people either think that extraterrestrials either directly built the pyramids or told ancient peoples how to build the pyramids. And there's also some other, that's an Eric Von Daniken type thing, Chariots of the Gods type shit. There was also a guy named Ignatius Donnelly, I think his name was, and he came up with the idea, this was in the late 1800s, that Atlanteans, you know, had given them the knowledge of how to do it. Because again, they were too dumb to figure it out, evidently. Right. But the stupid thing is, the whole fulcrum of his argument was that, well, it must have been Atlanteans because look at how similar the ancient Egyptian pyramids and the Mesoamerican pyramids are. And I'm just like, what pyramids are you looking at, son? Because they are not similar. And they were used for different things. And there was a huge gap in time.
Between the two.
I mean, you have to think the oldest Mesoamerican period, the pyramid, was 2,000. I mean, the Egyptian ones were to like 2,000 years older than that.
Right.
So there was like a huge gap in time.
They're not related.
They're not related at all.
They're not even built the same way.
No. And the ancient Egyptian pyramids were generally, you know, it was one construction event. They're like, okay, we're going to build this pyramid, which they generally used as tombs, and we're going to build it and however long it took, and then they would build it until it was finished. The Mesoamerican pyramids were built over generations, and they kind of added on to them. Like, they would add new levels and stuff like that. Now, there were very few of them that were found that were used as tombs. They were usually just ceremonial, basically staging areas.
Yeah.
They would have, like, temples at the top. They would do sacrifices on them or whatever. They were kind of like a city center type of thing that everyone could gather around and see things. So, and like I said, they weren't all built in one go. Like, it wasn't one project.
Yeah, whenever the royal families would change out, they would usually put a new face over the temples to make it look like a new civilization occurring or a new epoch in the city's history. Because, you know, all these little Mayan cities were not really unified most of the time. These are kind of, a good analogy would be kind of like the Greek city-states.
Yeah, very similar. And they were pretty much around the same time period, the Greco-Roman era and the Mesoamerican era.
And they actually didn't last long. If I remember correctly, the average age of one of those cities was only about 100 years, 150 years before it became uninhabited. So this whole idea of, you know what I mean, that like, oh, they disappeared one day. Look at all these ruins. They would abandon cities after a while.
Yeah, and actually, we're going to get into that later because that's kind of one of the most interesting things. And one of the most persistent myths...
Yeah, is that they vanished and abandoned all this.
And there's this big mystery about it. It really wasn't a mystery at all.
They'd build a city. They'd build a city and they'd run it into the ground. The government would get overthrown. Chaos would reign and they'd all run. Because each city was its own state.
And like I said, I kind of wanted to get into that more.
Oh, sorry. I'm getting ahead of it.
Yeah, like after the break, because I was kind of talking more about the paranormal stuff before that.
All right.
Okay, so we talked about ancient aliens pyramids. Obviously, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
There was also some people that thought because they found skulls in Mesoamerica that were elongated. So some people thought that had some kind of alien significance. This is not the case. Obviously, what they do, and actually some tribes now still do it also, they do head binding.
Yeah.
They take a baby and they have various, there are diagrams on the internet if you want to go look, and they kind of flatten its head as it grows, so it grows into that particular shape. It wasn't done to everybody. It was usually just done to nobility, and they did it because they wanted to distinguish themselves from the commoners, and also because they believed that their gods wanted them to look that way, that was more attractive to the gods. And that's pretty much all it was. But you can see some pretty weird examples of these really, really elongated
Yeah.
Skulls that are really very odd looking. But it's a similar kind of thing to some, you know, some of the tribes that used to put the rings in their necks and make the long necks and things. It's a similar kind of thing.
Now, there's this thing called the Star Child skull.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's an anomalous skull.
That everybody says, aliens!
It's not alien.
No, it's not an alien skull.
There was something wrong with that baby.
It's obviously a child skull.
Yeah. And there was evidently lots of inbreeding in Mayan society.
Yeah.
Because they had a lot of birth defects.
This particular, now I can't remember the name of it, but this particular deformity that this skull has, it looks very much like, it might be called Cyclops syndrome. I've seen pigs with it and stuff like that where your nose and the eyes don't develop correctly, and then it looks like you just have one tiny little eye and kind of like no nose.
Yeah.
So the Star Child skull kind of looks like a kid with that deformity.
Okay. All right.
I think it's called, but if somebody correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, and there's been different tests on it, you know, and they've said that the entire skull is made out of the same thing tooth enamel is made out of. You know, I don't know. But
I kind of doubt still, it. To me, it looks like a regular kid skull that's deformed.
Yeah.
It just looks like a normal human skull that.
Yeah, it has teeth anomalies. It's not, no way is it alien. That is Homo sapien. And there's also a little tiny human skeleton that's emerged.
That's right. I remember saying something about that.
That is also human. It's human, but it is small. It's only like 5 inches long. It's weird.
I feel like people don't see this a lot, particularly in the West.
Yeah.
There's this really good book, I think it's just called Mutants, I read it several years ago, where they talked about all different kinds of deformities that have been seen in humans and stuff. Mm. You would be alarmed at what's out there. Well, one, at what's out there, but how common it is.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of these are really, really common. Like I said, you don't really see it much in the West because, you know, we have amniocentesis and, you know, you can, during your pregnancy, you can see things during the
pregnancy.
You
can find some weird stuff just right there on YouTube.
Yeah.
Stuff that's happening in the Middle East where they don't use amniocentesis and a lot of that stuff as much. And babies are coming out pretty weird.
Like some of those like mermaid babies and stuff like that. Yeah, it's like really weird looking. So like I said, it's, you know, left to its own devices, nature will fuck up your babies like pretty good.
Yeah.
And pretty commonly. So, you know, it's just now with the advent of like kind of modern medicine and stuff like that you don't see it as much. But yeah, so the skull, that skull, it's not alien, obviously. Now, since we're speaking of skulls, we also have to talk about crystal skulls.
Yeah.
Because when you talk about Maya, that's a pretty common thing, the crystal skull.
Yeah.
And especially that horrible, horrible Indiana Jones movie. And I liked all the other Indiana Jones
movies.
God, that Indiana.
Lucas, boy, he can lucify something. The lucification of some of the best stuff.
Jeez. That was a really shit movie.
Yeah.
And, well, the thing is, I liked the concept, but just the whole...
It was like an Indiana Jones parody.
It was. That's exactly what it was like.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it was like.
It was almost kind of like the second Escape from L.A. was almost a parody of Escape from New York. Even though I love Escape from New York.
Yeah.
And I actually like Escape from L.A., but it's a parody.
Yeah, pretty much.
Pretty much.
Yeah. And the thing about Indiana Jones and the Crystal Skull, this is how sucky it was. I saw it, the first time I saw it, I was on an airplane. And I couldn't tell if it was the plane ride or the movie that was making me nauseous. For real. You know what I mean? It was just bad, bad, bad. And I saw it again, like hoping, oh, maybe it was just me being on a plane. But no, it sucked. Okay, crystal skulls. These are pretty much generally because, this like the Mesoamericans and they made these beautiful crystal skulls.
Yeah, by
polishing them and stuff like that. And there are several examples in various museums.
Yeah.
Now, every single one.
Every one of them.
That has been subjected to scientific scrutiny.
And they've all been subjected.
And all the ones so far that they have found.
Have been subjected to scrutiny.
They are modern.
They're modern.
They were made after the middle of the 19th century.
Yeah.
Most of them were probably made in Germany. And there was a town in Germany where there were a bunch of workshops. And they were, because they know that the quartz that the skulls were made out of was probably came from Brazil. But there was a particular town in Germany that was kind of known for having all these workshops of making like all these really cool objects
out of
Brazilian quartz,
right.
Not just skulls. But obviously all of the skulls have been worked with modern tools.
Yeah, that's the dead giveaway. You look at the thing with a microscope and you can see the polishing marks from electric tools.
Yeah, so. They've used tools that were not invented until after the middle of the 19th century.
Little rotary tools.
And some of them used, you know, various chemicals and things like that weren't in use until the 20th century.
Right.
So they're all pretty much...
Debunked.
Not that they aren't beautiful. They are.
Not that they're not crystal skulls.
They are crystal skulls.
They're
just
not
old. Mesoamerican. They're
right.
not old.
Right.
Which, I don't want to shit on the crystal skulls because, like I said, as art objects, they are really beautiful.
Right.
But they're just not, but you don't have to like add on by saying, oh, they're old and Mesoamerican and stuff like that. No, they're not, you know, they're not handmade. They were made by tools, but they're still pretty. I just, you know, so I don't understand why people get disappointed about that. So probably most of them are from Germany. What we're going to do now, because I wanted to kind of get into the quote unquote disappearance of the Maya, the Spanish conquest, and I wanted to get a little bit into human sacrifice too.
Right, so we're going to go more into the historical facts.
You know, we're getting up to halfway point now anyway, so let's kind of take a break right now, and then we will come back and talk more about kind of historical type of things. So we'll be back in just a few minutes.
Once upon a time, a madman, poet, and thief known as John Urbansick, that's me, challenged himself, myself, to write a story a day, every day, for a year, by hand. Some of them worked. Some of them failed. Some of them were spectacular. Then I did it again. Join me every week for Ink Stains as I do it a third time, and I will read you some of these stories. I'll talk about the process, about creativity in general, writing in specific, and maybe I can help ignite your artistic adventures.
Hey, 13 O'Clock fans. Love the show but don't have an hour to spare? Check out our new list channel, 13 O'Clock in Minutes. All the fun, creepy topics of the main podcast, but in easy-to-swallow, bite-sized pieces. Links in the description. More videos to come soon. Subculture Corsets and Clothing is our favorite store for unusual clothing, shoes, and accessories. They offer a wide selection of men's and women's clothing at great prices. Subculture also offers a cool selection of shoes and accessories. Steampunk, gothic apparel, retro, corsets, and so much more at Subculture Corsets and Clothing. Check out Subculture online at subculturecorsets.com. That's subculturecorsets.com. Make sure you use the discount code 13 o'clock for a 10% discount. Subculturecorsets.com or visit their store in Jacksonville, Florida, just off I-95.
Three guys with beards.
The usual gang of idiots. That's me, Christopher Golden.
New York Times best-selling authors.
My name is Jim Moore.
Interviews with pop culture stars and creators.
So I'm Jonathan Mayberry.
And they don't talk about politics.
Course of Human Events.
Jesus, let's not talk about the Course of Human Events today.
I said they don't talk about politics.
I suspect we may bend our rule about no politics on the beards and talk about politics on the beards.
Didn't you say they don't talk about politics?
If somebody else says something, we should...
Thank you.
Can anyone hear me? Am I all alone here?
Three guys with beards.
Tuesdays, exclusively on Project Entertainment Network.
The Unseen Hand. A new exploration of poltergeist phenomena by Jenny Ashford. Author of The Rochdale Poltergeist, House of Fire and Whispers, and The Mammoth Mountain Poltergeist. The Unseen Hand is a comprehensive collection of over 100 reported poltergeist cases from the first century to the present day. All the best-known cases are presented, from the Bell Witch to Jeff the Talking Mongoose, from Rosenheim to Tina Resch, from Enfield to the Entity. A large selection of fascinating and lesser-known accounts from all over the world are also included, and all contain testimony from the most eerie and extraordinary events. The Unseen Hand is the ultimate compendium for readers interested in poltergeist disturbances throughout history and the theories behind what causes them. On sale now from Amazon in print, ebook, and audiobook formats. Go to Unseen Handbook on Facebook and visit www.jennyashford.com for more information.
All right, now we're back talking about the Maya. Now,
truth is stranger than fiction.
Usually. Yeah. Well, here's the thing. The thing that, and I think this is probably one of the most common misconceptions about the Maya, that they just, quote unquote, suddenly disappeared.
No, they're still there.
Well, yeah, they're still there. There's like 6 million of them. Yeah. They're still Maya, you guys. They didn't die. They're still all about, they're in Belize, they're in Guatemala, they're in Mexico.
They're even still speaking that language.
Yeah. So, you know, they didn't really go anyplace.
Right.
Really what happened, it wasn't so much a collapse as it was kind of a dispersal, right. I feel like. What they think happened, now this, and it didn't have anything to do with the Spanish, because the Spanish, Hernan Cortez, didn't get there until 1525. Historians place the Maya civilization into two periods, which would be the Classic period and the Post-Classic. Now, the Classic period ended in 900 CE, or AD if you prefer. So it was several hundred years after their kind of big heyday that the Spanish even showed up.
Right.
What ended up happening, they think, I mean, they're not entirely sure, but there were a lot of factors going on at the time that contributed to this collapse, if you want to call it that, or dispersal or whatever. And I'd also recommend, if you haven't read it, I mean, most of you probably read it, but Collapse by Jared Diamond. And he goes into this, goes into his theory about what happened in great detail. But generally, what happened mostly was kind of an environmental catastrophe.
Mesoamerica was not sustainable. That culture and that civilization was not sustainable. It needed more technology to actually support its population density. There's a lot of problems with it. And there's this myth that, 500 Spanish conquistadors came and collapsed that civilization. The total myth. If you actually read what Hernan Cortes did, it had more to do with Hernan and a bunch of his Indian allies overthrowing the despotic regime of the Aztecs. And then Hernan not getting what he was promised by the Spanish government. That was really what happened. And also the Mayans abandoning their religion in favor of Catholicism. That's really kind of what happened in the big picture.
But really, okay, so before the Spanish even got there, like I said, hundreds of years, and this is before the year 900, which, like I said, is the what is considered the end of the classic Maya period of their civilization. Now, you have to imagine, at this stage, before 900, they had massive cities. Yeah. Some of these cities could accommodate 100,000 people. It's they're metropolises,
in fact,
more or less.
When Hernan Cortez's men saw the very first Mayan city, and this wasn't even a first-tier city. It was one of the second or third-tier cities. They all mutinied because it was the biggest thing that they had ever seen. It was painted turquoise. It had red trim on it. And they all ran back to the ships. And Hernan burned the ships.
Yeah.
So they couldn't run. And sent some of them back to go get reinforcements. Some of the ships left. And then they went on their mission. And they basically used diplomacy. There wasn't enough Spaniards to use force. It was a lot more complicated than it's kind of shown in the movies. Hernan had an Indian wife, a bunch of Indian children. He was a teenager when he showed up. Really, the study of Hernan Cortez's story is really cool. If you have a chance, you should hear his story.
But like I said, before the Spanish even got there, several hundred years before the Spanish even got there, their cities had already been significantly depleted. Like I said, the Maya were still there. They were just spread out farther. What ended up happening, they think, was a combination of environmental factors and a few trade factors as well. What they think happened, they basically expanded beyond their natural resources.
Yeah.
So they were building these gigantic cities, which would in turn attract more people, which would mean they would have to make the cities bigger, and that they would have to clear more land for agriculture.
Right.
Now, they were taking down so many trees and clearing so much land for agriculture that now when you clear such large tracts of land, you are going to, and environmental scientists that have studied this period, they think that there was already a drought at this period. Now the Maya had dealt with a few droughts before. They weren't dumb. They knew what they were doing. But at this point they had deforested so much of the land and had cleared so much of the land that, you know, when you clear so much land, the solar, you don't get as much solar radiation reflecting back. You don't get as much
precipitation?
Yeah, you don't get as much
clouds.
The water sucking back up from the, what's the word for that?
Evaporation.
Thank you. Jesus Christ. Yes. God, I'm getting old, seriously. I can't remember words anymore. But yeah, so you don't get as much evaporation, so you don't get as much clouds, you don't get as much rainfall. Now, since there was already kind of a drought situation going on at the time, and then since there was so much deforestation, so it made the drought situation worse.
They were cutting down the rainforest.
Yeah, it made the drought situation much worse than it had been previously. So obviously you have a drought situation, you're going to have your crops failing, which is going to cause famine. It's going to cause disease. It's going to cause intercity fighting. Yeah. It's going to cause various other things.
Now, here's another thing is that they also had no agricultural technology. They didn't know about fertilization. They irrigated a bit, but I don't think they knew about fertilizing soil. They didn't rotate crops. You know, they
did have some problems with soil erosion.
They
had been going on for hundreds of years and it had been fine, but they had so much rainforest to spread out into.
And the evidence was showing that they were depleting the soil around the cities.
Yeah, they eventually got to a point where it just wasn't sustainable anymore.
Skeletons a lot of the skeletons in the later parts of each one of these little city areas or urban areas would show like signs of malnutrition, which that they weren't getting enough caloric intake.
And yeah.
Not a balanced diet. They were probably just mostly sort of trying to survive off of corn and maybe rats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then there was also...
It gets to the point where it's not worth it to live in the city.
Yeah, so, and that, there was also a thing, too, where during this time period, they were kind of transitioning. Now, before this period, they had used mostly land-based trade routes, but it was kind of slowly transitioning over to more sea-based trade routes, which meant that a lot of farmers and craftsmen and stuff like that, if they wanted to sell and trade their wares, then they would have to generally move to, you know, closer to the sea, closer to the new trade centers. So there was kind of a lot of factors going on at the time that encouraged people to leave the cities and kind of disperse into other areas. You know, it wasn't a kind of case where everyone just left one day. I mean, it took several hundred years.
Yeah.
Like about 150 years.
Although there is evidence of cities being abandoned rapidly. Some of those cities had signs that they were abandoned like within a few days because of turmoil, because there would be sculptures left undone. Not all those cities were abandoned at the same time.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Right.
And honestly, some of them, like some actually pretty large cities,
yeah,
were still largely occupied. I mean, up until the 15th century.
Right.
Like I said, this kind of myth of the sort of sudden collapse, like everybody just left one
vanished,
day or they all vanished and went somewhere.
The UFOs came down and got them.
And got
no, no, didn't happen.
Yeah, they came down with the death rays and just, they Mars attacked everybody. But yeah, that did not happen. It took hundreds and hundreds of years.
Good analogy was that UFOs did not come down and take the ancient Greeks. They didn't come down and get the Romans either.
Yeah.
They're just...
To me, it's... Okay, this is another thing that seems very weird. Like, I don't ever see anybody attributing... the fall of Rome or something
to aliens. Yeah.
But for some reason, Mesoamerica, everybody's suddenly like, oh, they just left one day. They all like disappeared.
Yeah,
I mean, you know what I mean? That's just really weird. Why? Yeah. Why just that specific?
I think somebody made up that story in the 60s.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Because it really
wasn't going down there to take peyote with the Indians and coming up with crazy ideas and writing them down in
books. Suppose. But it just seems strange that that's kind of the only civilization that people say that about. Really. I mean, that they just kind
of
took off.
I think it has to do with the way the glyphs look and the way all the sculptures look. It looks kind of extraterrestrial. It's kind of alien. It's hard to interpret what's being, you know, like when a Western person looks at some of these drawings that the Maya made, even the Aztecs also, it's hard to interpret what you're seeing.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what a Mayan headdress looks like. You don't know how, the style of art, what they're drawing. You're not really familiar with it.
Yeah.
Like, have you ever seen some of those glyphs of, say, like a Mayan warrior who's dancing? Got something on his head. You don't know what the hell that is.
Yeah.
You know, like, what's on his head? No, it's the way it really looked, and that was like a headdress that they wore, you know?
I feel like people are more... the Egyptian stuff looked pretty weird, too, but I think it's so ubiquitous now that people are kind of used to it. I don't think the Mesoamerican stuff gets as much play, maybe, as the Egyptians. They're not quite as well-known.
It's funny, you know, when you look at some of the, like, a Mayan glyph or a picture of something happening, like three or four people sitting around, one of them's got his fingers bleeding, the other one's doing this, and there's smoke coming up. And there's skulls in the guy's headdress. You don't know what you're looking at. But when you have somebody who's studied the whole religion and the mythos and everything, they can explain to you exactly what's being shown and what it means. And then you go, oh, okay.
Yeah, it makes total sense.
It makes sense.
Just like in context, it all makes sense. Just like every other ancient religion does, everything.
Right.
You know, and you can see how they came to believe that and how their stories like developed around those sort of ideas. But, you know, as we were saying before, so by the time the Spanish got there, they had been depleted somewhat, or dispersed rather. Obviously the Spanish arriving didn't help. That is true that the Spanish did have diseases that Mesoamericans were not immune to, so that didn't help matters. And they, you know, they also had iron and gunpowder and things like that that the Mesoamericans did not have. But it still took the Spaniards almost 200 years to completely subjugate. Really, the last defeat of one of the Maya cities was not until almost 1700.
Yeah. But Cortez's writings demonstrate, though, that the gunpowder and the steel and all that really didn't make a tactical advantage. It was mostly psychological.
Because the thing is, the Maya were ambush warriors.
And, you know, what's a flintlock rifle? How's that going to help you fighting a damn enraged rock concert? That's what it was like. It was like fighting a rock concert. You got one shot off and that was it. You know, the Mayans had good weapons technology. It was like a flat stick, kind of like a baseball bat. It was flattened with obsidian shards
lying. Yeah, they had obsidian blades. They had bows and arrows.
They said that that made
they were familiar with the terrain. The Spaniards were not.
Said that that could take a limb off of a single blow, and it left a very ragged wound, and you bled to death quickly. You know, they had good stuff.
Yeah.
Most of the fighting actually was done by Indian allies of Cortez.
Yeah, because some of them did. Some of them did ally themselves with him early on, because there were a lot of factions that were infighting.
It was more like a revolt. It was a revolt against the Aztecs, and the Aztecs were not, you know, they weren't, you know, all real good people either. You know what I mean? They weren't all, you know, they were kind of like the Nazis of the Mesoamericans. They had subjugated all the city states around them, and it was a totalitarian regime that was pretty brutal. Yeah, but I'm not sure how unusual that was for a Mayan civilization. But the founder was supposed to be pretty much a psycho. I mean, he skinned his bride on the wedding night and wore her skin in front of the father during a wedding feast.
That's pretty fucked up.
Yeah, he wore his bride's skin.
That's some Hannibal
actually,
shit
he didn't
right
wear,
there.
He didn't wear the skin. He put the skin on one of the priests. It had something to do with causing rain. It was like a sacrifice to a rain god. It says bizarre. And because of that, they got kicked out. And
yeah.
And all the Aztecs got exiled. And they ended up finding a place to live out in Lake Xochimilco. And that's where the Aztec capital city was. It was built on an artificial island.
So you're telling me that the Maya like saw the Aztec stuff. Now the Maya did some pretty brutal shit too, but like the Aztecs were like, bro, that is too much even for us. Okay,
yeah, it was
just
too much.
Get out.
Yeah. The Aztecs were no joke.
Yeah.
The Aztecs were absolutely no joke.
That's very funny.
Yeah, and their founder was a psychedelic-taken psychopath.
Well, since we're on the topic of gruesome things and stuff like that, let's talk about human sacrifice.
All right, yeah.
Because that's something that the Maya are also kind of known for.
Yeah.
And this is something that kind of gets brought up a lot. There's kind of... I don't think there's so much nowadays, but there used to be kind of this whole thing about, oh, the ancient people and they were peace loving and everything like that. Obviously, that's not true.
No, it's not true.
But I don't think they were necessarily that much more savage than modern people. There's kind of, it's kind of a gray area, like always. It's like, yeah, they do savage shit. People nowadays do savage shit. It's like not, you know, human sacrifice.
The
Spaniard, but a lot of civilizations did it back then.
The Spaniards were appalled. One of the first things saw was they saw Aztec priests sacrificing little girls in honor of their arrival. Spanish conquistadors went berserk and killed some of those priests. And it was a massacre from day one, which is understandable when you look at it from today. The Spaniards were Catholics. They saw this as devil worship. And they really wouldn't be wrong. Because some of the Aztec gods were devils. Now, they did venerate them, but it wasn't so much of worshiping devils as gods or your creator per se. They were trying to bribe these devils off. So in other words, if you could do a sacrifice to these demons to prevent something bad from happening. So they were kind of like bribing the devil. Well, you know, the Spaniards weren't having that. And it was sometimes human sacrifice involved, you know, bribing off these devils. They did weird stuff. They had underground caves filled with dead bodies on marionette strings. And they would take sacrifices and walk them down through there, show them what hell was going to be like and the underworld was going to be like. Come out the other end and then they'd walk them up into a temple and cut their hearts out. They were hardcore. They also took a lot of psychedelic drugs. It was a pantheonistic religion like, you know, ancient Greek religions. But it involves, you know, like the Titans, which would be kind of like their version of the devils.
Yeah. They needed to be appeased, both the good ones and the bad ones.
From a point of view of a Spanish Catholic, this is straight up devil worship. And they treated it as such. Now, it was all written down. Later on, a Spanish friar went down there and recorded all the beliefs and the names of the gods and made a huge 1,000-page book. You know, it took him years to write it. He sent it back to the Vatican, and it just sat there in a Vatican library unread for centuries. Pretty much everything we know comes from that book. Everything else was burned, except something called the Dresden Codex, which survives in Dresden. A Mesoamerican priest gave it to this Catholic priest saying, please, you know, save this. This is basically the last document of our civilization and the meaning of everything. And really, it's been translated now. It's basically just the instructions about what the long count calendar is and explanations of the four seasons. That's really all it was. From memory, it may have been a little bit more than that. Pretty weird. It was, it was a weird religion, but quite cool. Quite cool.
It is. I've always found it very interesting. And just because, like I said, it doesn't seem as ubiquitous in Western culture, or European culture as, Egyptian mythology, Greco-Roman mythology. It seems like it's almost sort of given short shrift because it's New World and all that other type of thing. But I've always found it really fascinating. It's very death oriented, but I don't know if they would have necessarily seen it that way.
It had the book that the priests wrote put everything down in Christian analogies. In other words, they said some of these rain goddesses were kind of a good analogy of, say, like the Virgin Mary, and that some of these other, you know, figures might have a good analogy with, say, like the Archangel Gabriel. But then some of them would be like, okay, a good analogy with this one is like the demon of death or the devil himself. You know, so they had a bunch of different figures and they had to venerate them all to keep the system working. Basically.
Because, I mean, just like a lot of ancient peoples, they thought, well, we have to appease the gods so that they won't fuck us over.
Right.
So that we'll have a good crop.
Exactly.
So that, you know, our people will be fertile. So, you know, we won't have bad weather
or
whatever.
That's basically what they were doing. They also had a really good warrior ethos. Everything was about fighting. Their warfare was religious. It was about getting sacrifices. You went out and you fought some other guys who were basically the same religion as you from another city. And you could defeat them in combat and take them back as living captives and sacrifice them to the gods to pay back the blood debt. Now, what's funny is that these sacrifices, these captive sacrifices, are going to the top of this temple without any struggle because it's their religious duty to do so. They believe it's their religious duty.
Well, they'd be doing the same thing to the other guys if the situation was reversed.
It was more like a sport.
They did. Generally, most of these sacrifices that they made, and if you saw the movie Apocalypto, that's actually pretty accurate.
Pretty accurate. Yeah.
That's what they would do. They would paint the people blue. They would take them to the top of the pyramid. They would have a huge big ceremony. Everyone would come to see it. Everyone would be taking hallucinogens. It would be a party. And then they would behead the guy and cut his heart out of, you know, one or the other. That wasn't the only way they sacrificed people. They had a few other methods. Sometimes they would paint a person blue, tie them to a post, and then have everybody take turns shooting arrows at them. Sometimes they would laden people down with gold and jewels and stuff and then throw them into the cenote.
Yeah.
You know, the big
they
water
do that to
hole,
girls
big
a lot. I think they
yeah,
to
they,
girls
so
lot.
Generally who they sacrificed, you know, slaves or prisoners of war. They like to sacrifice orphan children, bastard children.
Yeah.
Criminals.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. Children, I think, were kind of their favorite sacrifice because of their innocence, so their blood was supposed to be pure or whatever. Generally, I think most of their sacrifices were captured warriors or captured slaves from other tribes.
In Apocalypto, they just show them capturing like a random forest tribe and then taking them to sacrifice them. More likely would have been one city capturing other city guys and sacrificing them in their city. History mostly demonstrates shows that was happening. One city would start fighting another city at a certain time of year. Usually it was like a ritualistic combat. Okay, this is the time of year in which we have a war.
This is fighting time.
This is fighting time. So, you know, we're going to go fight that city over there and they're going to meet us out in the field and somebody's going to get captives.
And then, yay, we can have a big sacrifice
party. Big sacrifice. Now, when the city was doing bad, according to witnesses, Western witnesses, when the cities were doing bad, you know, when the ecology was screwed up and there was a lack of food, they would order these sacrifices not only amongst warriors, but of the general population. So you could reduce the population. And when they would kick the heartless or headless bodies back down those temple stairs,
which they did do,
they'd pile up around the bottom of the stairs. And people in the crowds would grab those bodies and run off with them because they were eating them.
So free meat.
So they were recycling the population.
It sounds terrible, but when you're starving, you know.
Now, the Spanish reported that in the Mayan capital city, there were big structures like pens about the size of a three-story building made of skulls on racks. And in there, lots of bodies. And, you know, it was nasty. The place stank around the temples. And some of those temples were an inch thick and dried rotten blood with maggots in them and stuff. You know, it was not a pretty sight. There was also reports of ritual necrophilia to keep mummified.
Really?
It was to keep mummified kings satisfied.
Oh.
Weird stuff like that.
Ew.
Yeah.
Oh my God. We did a whole show on necrophilia and you walked out. You were so grossed out.
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like that stuff.
And still people still, to this day, I still get comments about how funny they think that show is just because of you having that little, be like, I'm out of here. That was so funny. One of the coolest things, this is one of the coolest things when I was researching this show, was that I was reading a lot of like, you know, Maya creation myths and stuff like that. And kind of similar to the Judeo-Christian creation myths we're all more familiar with, the Maya also had, they had kind of four creations. I don't know if they were kind of separate creations, but the animals were created first. And then there was wet clay. That was the next creation. Mm-hmm. And then the third creation was wood.
Mm-hmm.
Which it's kind of cool because it kind of shows like the very varying importances of the things in their culture.
That you're making,
And then the fourth was humans, and the humans were made out of maize dough or corn dough,
and
rather
blood
I and think. Blood, yeah,
and blood taken from the sun.
I don't know. Just I always thought that was like really fascinating.
There was another one where it was more of an Aztec creation myth story that I remember, and this is just off the top of my head. I may have it wrong. One of their big gods was called Huitzilopochtli, I think is how you pronounced it. And he took either his bride or his sister, I don't remember, and tied snakes around her arms and legs and then chopped them off and threw her torso down from heaven and along with the arms and legs. And somehow that created the earth. I don't understand how
that's
that
kind of like the Egyptian myth of Isis and Osiris.
Yeah, very similar to that. Now, when the Spaniards took over the capital city, they buried a lot of those statues from the Mayan religion. And a statue of that survives in a museum. I think it's still in Mexico. And it's a huge disc, probably about 40 feet in diameter, stone, maybe about 4 feet thick. And it's a woman in almost kind of like a swastika type position, with her arms and legs cut off with snakes used as tourniquets. And she's laying there on the ground. It's really creepy. Maybe you can show a picture of it.
I know. I should look for that. There's I can't remember the name of the
museum. What I was going to say was is that that disc was at the foot of the stairs to the one of the big sacrificial pyramids. So when you threw a dead body down those stairs, it landed on that stone.
Man, that takes a lot of forethought.
Yeah.
They were really thinking about that. Okay, now we have to have this cool thing that their bodies can land on.
Yeah, they're reenacting creation somehow. Maybe they were doing something to women and throwing them off that temple to land there on top of that thing. So I'm sure, you know, one of the archaeologists know more about what that stone was actually for, but they knew where it was.
That's kind of cool. There's actually, I used to live in Tampa, and there's a museum there. What the hell is the name of it? The Southeastern Museums? I don't know. Yeah. Of Natural History or something like that. And they have a huge collection of Maya, Aztec, Toltec, Olmec, that kind of artwork and pots and statues and things like that. And it's really cool. I mean, I haven't been there for many years, but I remember being really impressed by all the artifacts they had there. So, you know, if you're in that area, you might want to drop by and see it. I guess it's still cool. I haven't been there, like I said.
I've only seen one big artifact personally, and that was at the California Museum of Natural History, and that was one of the Aztec calendars. They've got a big one there.
Yeah, they have one in Tampa too.
Yeah, it's huge. And it looks really cool. It looks really cool in person. Now I don't know if they were painted. I think they were painted at one time.
Yeah, that's interesting. The one they have in Tampa is just stone. But I don't know if it had paint on it at one time.
I think they were originally painted because the temples were.
Yeah.
So I think everything that was painted, just that the paint that they used, of course, you know, wasn't modern paint. It just chipped off.
Well, it's just kind of like, and we were talking about this the other day, but like a lot of the ancient Egyptian stuff and the ancient Greco-Roman stuff, they think some of that might have been painted too, but now it's just
I always heard that
it
was all painted.
That now it's just kind of worn off. So now we just kind of see everything as like brown or white or whatever.
I heard that classic marble look, like something off of a Joy Division album cover.
That everybody's like super classy.
Yeah, that's not what they were going for. That's a modern interpretation. All that paint falling off. That really what it looked like was something tacky. Like it was all painted and the pubic hair was painted. It was like something out of a Persian discotheque. That's what it originally
looked
like.
I hope that's true because that's hilarious to me. That like all these years people have been thinking about like
how classy.
It's like, look, it's like so beautiful and minimalist, like all the white marble. And really it looked like just tacky
as hell.
With all these crazy wacky colors on it and everything like
with
that.
With the pubic hair painted on them and everything.
I love it. Seriously, I hope that's true. I don't know if it is, but I hope it is.
Evidently, it's there's true signs that it was all painted.
Yeah, that's rad. All right, well, we're coming up to the end of the show. So we kind of hope you enjoy this rather rambling discussion about the ancient Maya.
Yeah.
Okay. We had like a huge long thing and we didn't cover a lot of this.
We didn't cover a lot of it.
But, you know, we just...
Running out of time.
We're running out of time.
But the idea was is that there's nothing paranormal about the Maya.
Well, there's nothing paranormal about any of these ancient cultures.
There's nothing paranormal. Well, they believed in paranormal things.
Yeah, but I mean, there was no like paranormal intervention or...
And
they didn't have magic powers. Like, they didn't have crystal skulls and magic powers and all that.
The historical evidence of the truth about them is even cooler and weirder.
That's what I mean.
Than these stories that they've made up about them.
That's what I
read the history. It's a lot better.
Yeah, that's why I kind of wanted to do this show about them and why I was glad you suggested it, because I always thought the real shit about the Maya, about the Egyptians and stuff like that was cool enough.
Yeah.
Without having to make up stuff about aliens and all that bullshit.
And the modern portrayal of, oh, those poor Indians, they got taken care of. Nah. Those guys were badasses.
They were badasses.
They were badass, proud. They were a proud civilization of warriors, and they did all kinds of cool fucking wacky shit. And they looked cool.
They really did.
Yeah.
And, you know, as much as Mel Gibson's kind of a whack job, I did really like Apocalypto.
That movie is awesome.
And he did really seem to take a lot of pains to get it as accurate as possible, like the look of it as accurate as possible.
And those Aztec warriors were portrayed exactly as the Spaniards described them, that those guys were just monuments to warrior virtue, that they were ruthless and well-trained fighters.
As they would have to be.
You'd have to be, yeah.
You know, to live in that sort of... And to live in those large civilizations.
Lots of decorations and jade embedded into their teeth and lots of body modifications and tattoos. And, you know, they were hardcore.
Yeah. They were cool as shit looking.
They were real hardcore,
But anyway, so that'll do it for this episode 48. And remember, in a couple of weeks, we're probably going to be launching a Patreon, so be on the lookout for that. I'll make the big announcement probably on episode 50. We'll see how it goes if I get it put up before then. Also, like I said, if you're interested in Maya mythology and you want to read some fiction along that line, pick up 2012 AD. I'll put a link in the description. It's from Severed Press, and I had a short story in there. It came out in 2010, obviously, because it wanted to come out before to cash in on the whole 2012 thing. But, you know, story's still good.
Do yourself a favor and watch Apocalypto.
Yeah, if you haven't seen it, it's really good. I'll put a clip of it in the beginning.
It's a pure historical action movie. No English is spoken in it, and there's not a has to be.
Yeah, there's not a great deal of dialogue that I remember, and all of it, none of it's in English, but I really liked it. I thought it was a cool looking movie. Some of his other movies I didn't like so much, but I did.
Like the Jesus porn?
Yeah.
The Jesus crucifixion porn? What was that called?
Passion of the Christ.
Yeah. I heard that's just one big old long torture
it
sequence,
is, I've
basically.
Seen it.
Yeah.
It's funny because like people that would be all into that film and be like moralizing about it and everything would be like, they wouldn't watch a horror movie, but that's essentially what that is.
Yeah.
There's some pretty graphic shit in there.
The best Bible movie is Noah, the new Noah.
Darren Aronofsky one.
Yeah.
I liked that too. That was weird as shit. I loved
that. That was really cool.
Well, all Darren Aronofsky's movies are weird. That's why I'm so glad
that
he's
got the Archons encased and trapped into the earth.
Yeah, that was rad.
Stuff. They just...
I'm like, that is it. He's like, you know what? I'm going to go with
what it says.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to make it exactly what it says. And people are like, well, it's fucked up. That's not what it's... Yeah, that
no,
is.
No, that's what it says.
That is what it says.
And some
he
of
made
that,
it exactly like
some
it
some of that
story.
Came from the apocryphal text. What was the name of that book? The Jubilees? Because there's more about the flood. I think it's
right.
Jubilees.
It was in some of the books that didn't make it into the
right.
Bible.
I think it might have been Jubilees, but don't hold me to that.
Okay. So anyway, if you like the show, please like, subscribe, all that other jazz.
13 o'clock in minutes.
Go subscribe to 13 o'clock in minutes, which is our new sister channel. There's 10 videos up right now. Go to the Project Entertainment Network Patreon and give them a buck or two. Go listen to some of their other podcasts.
And stand by
really
for
awesome.
Our Patreon announcement.
And stand by for our Patreon announcement, which will probably be coming in a week or two. Mm-hmm. And that'll do it for episode 48. See you next Tuesday. Bye.
Oh, you asking me why we're all gonna die? Because the Mayans say it's over soon. The Mayans say the whole world's doomed. Yes, soon we'll be well done, barbecued by the sun. All be frying.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.